As we begin today's lesson, we are in Deuteronomy chapter 9. And if I was to give this a title, to this chapter a title, I would call it Moses' summary of Israel's rebellion. Moses wants Israel to remember your rebellion because he does not want you to repeat what you have done wrong in the past with the Lord. So as Moses was giving the charge for Israel to go ahead and to cross over that Jordan River and take possession of the Promised Land, he turned at this point in this Deuteronomy message to give a summary of Israel's rebellion over the past few years, so the past 40 years. And his first point was to cause the Israelites to remember the sons of Anakim. Remember the sons of Anakim. But why? Well, the first people that Israel would encounter when they crossed the Jordan River, headed west, would be the same people they refused to encounter 39 years before, after the spies returned with their report. Right now, they're sitting on the plains of Moab. They're going to go this way. And the first group of people in the first village they're going to visit are the sons of Anakim. Back 39 years before, in the second year, when they're sitting at Kadesh Barnea, the first group that they're going to have to attack going north is the sons of Anakim. So when the Lord became angry with them and ordered them from Kadesh Barnea back down to the Sinai, the leaders changed their minds back 39 years ago because the spies had come in, they'd given their report. And the people, the leaders, they changed their mind and they said, we can't go in. But yet they decided to go in after the Lord was angry with them, and they decided to go in, and they went and attacked the Anakim, and the Anakim basically destroyed some of the soldiers that they sent that way. The Lord did not fight for them then, and Israel suffered many, many casualties. Now here in verse 1 of Deuteronomy, Moses brings this very sour subject up again, because Israel must face those same people once more. Chapter 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are crossing over the Jordan today to go to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, great cities fortified to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know, and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Now the Anakim were the men of renown that were spoken of back in Numbers chapter 13, verse 33. Now the text in that passage calls them the Nephilim, which is an English rendition of the Hebrew word Nephilim that we can spell. And it means men of renown, it means men of fame, it means men of celebrity. People know about them. Who can fight against the Anakim? Because they're men of renown. And here is the report of the spies about these sons of Anak found back in Numbers chapter 13. We're going to begin reading in verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us. So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. Now in that original meeting, the Israelites felt so small and inferior to the people up in the Promised Land. And as our passage in Deuteronomy says, they were a people great and small, the sons of Anakim. And in Numbers 14, we find that the people rebelled against Moses when he ordered them to go ahead and go take the Promised Land. And the people were demanding that Moses be removed and a new leader be chosen. And it was after dark when rebellious moans began to spread through the congregation of the Israelite camp there at Kadesh Barnea. Moses and Aaron were in the firing line, but the people were mad at the Lord. And their minds began to imagine their doom if they went up to take the Anakim. And their mouths began to express their concerns, and their memories began to forget their slavery in Egypt. And their motive began to desire their true nature. Their mood began to turn against the leader. Numbers 14:4 said, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt." And in their motivation, they had barked up the wrong tree. They had attacked the wrong person. They had infuriated the Lord. They had set their feet on a path that would never allow them to see the promised land. You see, they were right here. They could have turned and just gone about 80 miles to the west and been back in Egypt. And in fact, they were in jeopardy right there because they were basically right on the borderline of Egypt's land anywhere. Now, I want to tell you, when you attack the leaders, leaders must know how to react. And what we are about to find out is the perfect example of the correct way leaders should react when faced with a rowdy assembly. Numbers chapter 14, verse 5 says, "Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel." No doubt, Aaron did not know what to do on his own. But he knew enough to follow his brother, who knew exactly what to do. Fall on his face. And even though the text says that Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of the assembly, we do not know if it was for the purpose of humility before the congregation or humility before God. If before God, it was for the purpose of seeking refuge from the stiff-necked, rebellious rousers in the crowd. That is probably the reason. But falling before the assembly was for the purpose of humility before the congregation, and that makes no sense at all. Moses was the leader. He had led them through all the plagues and everything. And because of the nature of the people in this world, it is hard to believe that Moses' action before them would produce a change in their hearts towards him. When people get angry and are in a mob, they do the unthinkable. But you see, young Joshua and the older Caleb were on the right track there with them. They had been part two of the spies. And they had a trust in the Lord that the others did not have. And so in Numbers chapter 14, verses 8 and 9, Caleb and Joshua said this to the people: "If the Lord is pleased with us, then He will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Well, those lines right there are the very lines that Joshua and Caleb said that won them a pardon from dying in the wilderness. That won not only them a pardon, but it also won their families and descendants, anyone over the age of 20, the pardon to be able to, if they were still alive at the time to go into the promised land, and at the time when they're at the plains of Moab, they get to go in because of the faithfulness of Joshua and Caleb. Because they had said if the Lord had promised to fight for the Israelites, that He would do. If the Creator of the universe did the fighting, then the Israelites should not worry about any group they met along the way. Oh, but the people were threatened. And they threatened to stone Moses and to stone Aaron and Joshua and Caleb. But the Lord stepped in and he said to Moses this, "How long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." Numbers chapter 14, verses 11 and 12. Now, we're soon going to see in our Deuteronomy study that this is not the first promise that the Lord has made to destroy the nation of Israel and still make the descendants of Moses a greater and a mightier nation. See, it happened back with the giving of the Ten Commandments before this event. When back when here, when they were still at Mount Sinai, 140 days in, the Lord is giving the Ten Commandments to the people. The issue here at Kadesh Barnea hasn't happened yet. We must wonder if the people heard the Lord speaking to Moses in this passage. When he says, "I'm going to destroy this." This congregation wanted to stone Moses and wanted to stone Aaron and Joshua and Caleb, despite the fact that they were really mad at the Lord instead of the four. They just didn't know it. The Lord could read their hearts. The Lord knew their intent. The Lord proclaimed His judgment upon them. He would smite them. But the promise to Moses was still, "I will make you a nation greater and mightier than they, and the congregation of those in rebellion would die." The people who are not rebelling would become a greater and mightier nation after the destruction of those in rebellion. What a promise! Yet, that would take some time. You see, the Lord had all the time in the world. He could wait. They could not. His time was limitless. Their time was limited. He knew how long it would take. They did not. Yet when the Lord was finished, they would be gone, and the congregation would be greater than ever before. And finally, after the Lord and Moses had a lengthy conversation, Israel was pardoned. And Moses had a lengthy conversation also himself with Israel. Israel was pardoned, but they would not see the promised land, all because they were afraid of the sons of Anakim, the people great and tall. You see, Joshua and Caleb had it right years before. Years before, they're standing here to go see the Anakim. Back over here, 39 years before, Joshua and Caleb had it right when they proclaimed that the Lord would fight for them if they would just trust Him. Now with Joshua and Caleb there with their families, ready to cross over the Jordan River and encounter the sons of Anakim again, Moses wanted everybody to remember that the Lord was going to fight for them. Verse 3. "Know therefore today that it is the Lord your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and He will subdue them before you so that you may drive them out and destroy them quickly, just as the Lord has spoken to you." The Lord would fight the Anakim and subdue them, so the Israelites could destroy them. The Lord would grab them. He would hold them down, and Israel would be able to put the sword in them. But why? Well, the sons of Anakim were destroyed not because of Israel's righteousness. No, not at all. Verse 4 tells us this, "Do not say in your heart when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, 'Because of my righteousness, the Lord has brought me in to possess the land.' But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you." After the Tower of Babel, all the sons of Canaan, all the way down through the ages, and including the sons of Anakim, because they're all the Canaanites, they had forgotten the Lord. And they had worshiped false gods of their own creation. And the sons had done it to themselves. Forgetting the Lord is wickedness. And the Lord is going to destroy the Anakim 39 years before. He was going to subdue them back there so that Israel could destroy them. But Israel rebelled. Israel was disobedient. So the Lord waited. He just waited. He could wait. 1,000 years is but like a day to the Lord. He could wait. Yes, he could wait until a new generation of Israelites could do the job. And so he waited 39 years. It was not because the new generation of Jews were so righteous. It was because Anakim was so wicked. Moses continued with the reason. He says the wretched nation was destroyed because of Anakim's wickedness in order to fulfill Israel's promise from the Lord. Verse 5. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going to possess their land, but it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. Know then, it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess. For you are a stubborn people. The verdict on the sons of Anakim had been settled in the mind of the Lord for a long, long time. The judgment and the punishment just had not been delivered. It was now time for the punishment to come to Anakim, the wicked nation as it was. But Israel was not receiving the land because of Israel's righteousness. The Lord was giving it to Israel because of His promise to Israel's forefathers. Israel was still a stubborn people. They were stubborn 39 years before when they met the Anakim, and they were still stubborn when they were standing before Moses here in the plains of Moab. A stubborn, stubborn group of people. And so Moses is reminding them, even before they go across the Jordan River to meet the Anakim again for the first time, Israel is stubborn. And so in this message, Moses wanted the nation of Israel to remember some of its other ungodly, unrighteous, stubborn things which occurred 39 years before. So Moses takes the congregation back to his first 40-day visit with the Lord on Mount Sinai at the time that the tables of stone were written by the finger of God. Verse 7. Remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day that you left the land of Egypt until you arrived at this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. Even at Horeb, you provoked the Lord to wrath, and the Lord was so angry with you that He would have destroyed you. When I went up on the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant which the Lord had made with you, then I remained on the mountain 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. The Lord gave me the two tablets of stone written by the finger of God, and on them were all the words which the Lord had spoken with you at the mountain from the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. And it came about at the end of the 40 days and nights that the Lord gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. It took exactly 3 months from the day of the departure from Egypt to arrive at Mount Sinai. Exactly 3 months. To the day. Within a few days after that, the Lord had called all of Israel to stand before Him at a place called Horeb, right there on the edge of the Mount of Sinai, so that they could hear Him announce to them all the Ten Commandments. Moses then climbed up the mountain. He spent 40 days with the Lord. About 130 days had passed. Little more than 4 months had passed since the departure from Egypt. Maybe 140 days. And at the end of the 40 days that the Lord was up on the mountain, the Lord had a gift for Moses and the people. These two stones carved by the Lord, by the finger of the Lord, with the Ten Commandments written on them. And just after the Lord handed the two tablets to Moses, the Lord had an emergency for Moses to address. The Lord knew what was going on down in the camp below during those first 40 days that he spent with Moses on the mountain. He let the people do what they wanted to do, to a point. The point had come, and Moses found out at the time of the warning of the corruption in the camp by God. And it was a point of the potential destruction of Israel by the word of God, the word of the Lord to speak them to be destroyed. Verse 12. Then the Lord said to me, "Arise, go down from here quickly, for your people whom you brought out of Egypt have acted corruptly. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made a molten image for themselves." The Lord spoke further to me, saying, "I have seen this people, and indeed, it is a stubborn people. Let me alone, and I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven. And I will make you a nation mightier and greater than they." Verses 9, 12 through 14. I told you when I mentioned it a while ago, we were going to see that again. A molten law image. What was Israel thinking? Just 40 days before, the Lord had commanded them, in His own words, the Ten Commandments, not to do such a thing as to make a graven image of anything, of any birds, cows, whatever. How short were their memories? Had they not paid attention? Did they not care? He called them a stubborn people then too. Here we see the same promise to Moses as we saw when the Lord said it again more than 9 months later. "Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven." Here's the promise. "And I will make of you a nation mightier and greater than they." That's a promise. The history of the nation of Israel down to today, to us today, is not kind to her in this regard. Israel is still a stubborn nation. Bullheaded, hard-headed, resistant. And she was not different 4 months out of Egypt. And with the Lord's warning to Moses, he scurried down the mountain as fast as an 80-year-old man could. And he immediately saw the prominent sin of Israel standing there, out in there, and people were around it. It could not be missed. He could hear the music. He could hear the laughter. Here is Moses' recollection, verse 15. "So I turned and came down from the mountain while the mountain was burning with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands. And I saw that you had indeed sinned against the Lord your God. You had made for yourselves a molten calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way which the Lord had commanded you. I took hold of the two tablets and threw them from my hands and smashed them before your eyes. I fell down before the Lord as at the first 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water because of all your sin you had committed in doing what was evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke His anger. For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure with which the Lord was wrathful against you in order to destroy you. But the Lord listened to me that time also. The Lord was angry enough with Aaron to destroy him. So I also prayed for Aaron at the same time. I took your sinful thing, the calf which you had made, and burned it with fire and crushed it, grinding it very small until it was fine as dust. And I threw its dust into the brook that came down from the mountain. At the time of the golden calf incident, Moses was leading the nation alone. Aaron would not become the high priest for several more months. The people had not built the tabernacle complex yet because the Lord was in the midst of giving the instructions for that tabernacle while that evil of the calf making was going on down in the camp. But what had Aaron done that caused the Lord's anger? Well, Exodus 32 tells us the story. Verse 1 of Exodus 32. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron, and they said to him, "Come make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." "We do not know what has become of him," the people cried out to Aaron. Here is an interesting predicament. The people were on the east side of Mount Sinai in the land of Midian, far from the nearest village that could hold, if only just 600,000 men entered the village, not including the women and children, that if these 600,000 or so men that were able to carry a sword descended on that village, it couldn't hold it. These people had water, they had manna to eat, and meat to sustain their lives. What were they doing? They were bored. Moses had been gone for a month or more, and they needed a project. They could not wait. They wanted to get ahead of God. They needed a God to worship. They needed a leader to lead them in the worship of a God, and they selected Aaron. Why? Moses had left Aaron in charge, that's why. But even if Moses was not coming back to the camp, as was their thoughts, why did they select Aaron? As rebellious as they were, why did they not select someone else? Notice that they called Moses the man. Where was the relationship? Where was the gratitude? Where was the loyalty to the man the Lord had sent to take them out of Egypt? They were not in distress. They were not in danger. They were well fed. They were well watered. They were well clothed. What had become of the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt? Perhaps his older brother Aaron was the right one to question about his whereabouts. And reading on in Exodus, we see the following. Exodus 32:2. "And Aaron said to them, 'Tear off the gold rings which are in your ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me.' Then all the people tore off the gold rings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron." Can you imagine that in your mind's eye? They're going around, they're collecting earrings, they're collecting jewelry, and they're bringing it to Aaron. And it seems Aaron did not resist their request for an image of a god. What was he thinking? Where was his loyalty to the God of gods who had answered the prayers from 6 months before and sent his brother Moses to rescue them from the land of Egypt? How short are their memories of these people? "Tear off the gold rings which you are in the ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me." Here we see that the Israelites may have been out of Egypt, but Egypt was hardly out of them. And as slaves in Egypt, they would not have worn earrings of gold. They had copied the Egyptians who wore earrings of gold when they got out of Egypt. On the last day, the people of Egypt made the Israelites wealthy as they gathered to leave the country. The Egyptians and that Egyptian pulled off earrings and threw them to the Israelites as the tribes gathered and the lines began to form, and earrings of gold were gathered like candy from a broken piñata. And all the ground, like children, the Israelites wrestled for the gold and hung them on their ears. And all through their journey, down the valley and down the caverns and onto the beach, where they would be trapped and then have to go on through the Red Sea, flashes of gold hung from their ears, a sight not common to their people, at least back to the days of the Tower of Babel. How sad it is that some of the last gifts bestowed on the Israelites as they left Egypt would now be used to abuse their own souls before a calf of molten gold. Exodus chapter 32 verse 4 goes on with what Aaron did. And he took this from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made it into a molten calf. And they said, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt." Aaron had a project. He melted the gold, took his hammer, and he beat the metal into the form of a calf. He then said, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt." It was nothing of the sort. It was a lie. It was a deception. It was a value of Egypt that should have been left back in Egypt when they crossed the border. Exodus 32 verse 5 says this, "Now when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and he said, 'Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord.' So the next day they rose early and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play." First, the object of their adoration was the calf, not the Lord. Second, in their worship they rose to play. Play is never to be a part of worship. Worship of the Lord God of creation is always serious business. Aaron knew that the Lord would have been the object of the worship, and yet he participated in this abomination. And here we see for the first time the infancy of a cult. Had it gone unchecked by the Lord and by Moses, it would have become no less than a full-blown, mature cult. Cults are always formed with just enough truth that people are unknowingly lured into their lair. So it is with the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Scientology, the Unification Church, the Restoration of the Ten Commandments of God, the Children of God, the Order of the Solar Temple, the Branch Davidians, the People's Temple, Heaven's Gate, Alamo Christian Foundation, Association of Research and Enlightenment, Christian Science, Church of the New Jerusalem, the White Revolution, the Church of Wales, and at least 34,000 more lesser known cults. They all seek acceptance by quoting God's holy word, but from there they play. They play with the definitions of words, the definitions of phrases, the interpretation of passages, the interpretation of doctrines inconsistent with the word of the Lord from Mount Sinai. Nothing about the word changes in all the Old and New Testament, but they change it for their own abominable purposes. But beware, nothing goes unseen by the Lord. He sees the corruption as they have worshipped even a molten calf. We must continue in Exodus for a few minutes to see the interaction that occurred between Moses and Aaron, brother to brother. Chapter 32 verse 21 says this, "Then Moses said to Aaron, What did this people do to you that you have brought such great sin upon them? And Aaron said, do not let the anger of my Lord burn. You know the people yourself, that they are prone to evil. For they said to me, make a God for us who will go before us, for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So I said to them, whoever has any gold, let them tear it off. So they gave it to me. I threw it into the fire, and out came a calf. And out came this calf. Aaron did not understand that Moses was only reflecting the anger of the Lord. Neither did Aaron tell the truth. He called for the gold earrings. He threw them in the cauldron. He formed the molten gold into the calf. He called for the worship. He was in charge, and he did not take responsibility for his sin that transferred to the whole nation. It, too, was part of the Lord's eternal plan for the obstinate, stubborn people called Israel. Moses then wanted them to remember three places: Taberah, Massa, and Kibroth Hattaavah, and what they did in those places to provoke the Lord to wrath. Moses said to them back in Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 22, as he's reminding them of the things they've done to provoke the Lord. Again at Taberah and at Massa and at Kibroth Hattaavah, you provoked the Lord to wrath. When the Lord sent you from Kadesh Barnea saying, go up and possess the land which I have given you. And then you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You neither believed him nor listened to his voice. You have been rebellious against the Lord from the day I knew you. What happened at Taberah? Now the contents of this story was recorded over in Numbers chapter 11. And there we discovered that the Lord lifted the cloud so the camp could leave Mount Sinai for the very first time to go and attempt to take the promised land. It was on the 20th day of the second month of the second year out of Egypt. That means the camp left Sinai 1 year, 1 month, and 5 days after leaving Egypt. Everything was done. They were ready to go. And on the way from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea, 72 hours after leaving Mount Sinai, the camp sat down for the night at Taberah, and their old habits returned. The people reverted to their old desires. The people returned to their old nature. The people remembered the good things of Egypt and not the bad. They forgot how bad things were in Egypt. They forgot what made them cry out for a Savior in the midst of their slavery. They forgot their distress, their pain, their hopelessness. They forgot their God who sent Moses to answer their prayer. Here is the story that occurred at Taberah, Numbers chapter 11, verse 1. Now the people became like those who complained of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And the people therefore cried out to the Lord, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires. And also the sons of Israel wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. Now, if you don't remember, the word manna means What is it? We have nothing to eat except for this. What is it? What they forgot, God remembered. And it made him angry enough to kill some of the people on the outskirts of the camp. The outskirts meant the edges, and because every tribe except Levi's camped out had an edge to it that faced out, there can be little doubt that some from every tribe except Levi lost loved ones that day when the Lord vented his anger. And at that moment, the people named that place Taberah. The place that had no name was given a name, and the Jews did a lot of that because of what happened there and what happened in other places. The Hebrew means burning. We do not know how many were burned that day, but what we do know is that however many died that day, by the end of the day, most definitely, there were no longer 603,550 men who were the age of 20 and above who had the ability to go out to fight, because many of them had died that day. What did the nation of Israel do at Massa? In Exodus chapter 17, the new nation of Israel was 3 months out of Egypt and had just arrived at the land connected to Horeb and Mount Sinai. Now, if you go back in our study here in Deuteronomy to chapter 6, verse 16 through 19, you can see that in lesson 6, we discuss this. They've left Egypt. They've come over through the Promised Land. They have arrived here at Mount Sinai. It's been 3 months. But when they got there, at that place, resting place, they called that place Rephidim. Rephidim means resting place. We have gotten here. We've gotten to the hotel. It wasn't a hotel. But we've gotten to the place where we're going to rest. It didn't take long that they realized there was no water there. And they complained to Moses. And so here is the story in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 2. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, "Why now have you brought us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do to this people? A little more, and they will stone me." And then the Lord said to Moses, "Pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. And behold, I will stand before you there on the rock of Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he named that place Massa and Meribah, because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Massa means tested or tried. He also called the name, gave the place a second name too, Meribah, which means contention. Moses gave that place two names. It was a place of testing God. Never again should Israel test God and contend with Him. Rather, they should follow His commands and simply trust Him and watch the wonders which He would do for them. What happened at Kibroth Hattaavah? It is interesting that Moses places Kibroth Hattaavah after Massa, when really and truly the Kibroth Hattaavah story goes right after the Taberah story. We find that story of Kibroth Hattaavah in the Numbers 11 chapter, right after the complaint at Taberah. Numbers chapter 11 verse 31 tells us this: "Now there went forth a wind from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on that side, all around the camp, about 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. The people spent all day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. And while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. So the name of the place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had been greedy. For a day's journey, quail was everywhere. Everywhere. Did you catch it? You go to the edge of the camp, and what you can walk in a day, about 10 miles probably, maybe 20, there's nothing there but quail. And in fact, not only is it quail for 10 miles or so, it's quail 2 cubits deep, or 36 inches deep, all around the camp. Can't you imagine? How are you going to walk through that trying to leave the camp for 10 miles? Every place you go, you have to step in quail, and it doesn't feel like snow. The Lord sent a plague against the people there who were greedy. It's greedy. Greedy for what? They were greedy for more than what the Lord had already provided. Greedy for more than they actually needed. Greedy for what they wanted despite what they had. They wanted more, and they got it. He provided meat beyond their ability to consume. Meat that could not be eaten would rot, putrefy, and breed diseases. And diseases brought death. Death came. All present had to bear the reality of the stink of death because of the greedy. Kibroth Hattaavah, which means graves of the lust. Surely this death plague reduced the number of the soldiers in the camp even more. Then in Moses' summary of Israel's rebellion, Moses turns his attention back to what he did after the golden calf incident. Verse 25. So I fell down before the Lord the 40 days and 40 nights, which I did because the Lord had said He would destroy you. And I prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord God, do not destroy your people, even your inheritance, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do not look at the stubbornness of this people or at the wickedness or their sin. Otherwise, the land from which you brought us may say, because the Lord was not able to bring them into the land which He had promised them, and because He hated them, He has brought them out to slay them in the wilderness. Yet they are your people, even your inheritance, whom you have brought out by your great power and by your outstretched arm. Now, in that very first 40 days that Moses spent up on Mount Sinai, the Lord was giving him the instructions for the tabernacle complex and all the statutes that were going to be needed to explain how the people were to live initially under the Ten Commandments. And that's found over in Exodus chapter 21 through chapter 31. And at the end of that 40 days, the Lord handed over to Moses the two tablets of the Ten Commandments of stone. And in Exodus chapter 32, the Lord told Moses to go down into that camp because of the creation of the festival worship of that golden calf that was occurring. And Moses scurried down the mountain and saw the sin. He broke the tablets. He crushed the calf to dust and poured the dust into the stream. And then he returned to the mountain to entreat the Lord on behalf of the nation that he had left down there below, the nation he had led out of Egypt a little more than 4 months before. Moses' case was built on the premise that if the Lord killed the nation of Israel, he had surely brought them out of Egypt for that purpose, to kill them. In other words, the people would think, Egypt and the rest of the nations would think, if he brought them out and they died, that was the purpose God took them out of Egypt. But it does not mean that that is what the Lord was thinking. That was what Moses was thinking. Moses was thinking from an earthly mindset. The Lord was thinking from the divine mindset. The two are different. Moses was fallible. The Lord was infallible. The Lord did not hate Israel. He was angry with Israel. Yet he still loved Israel. And he heard Moses. And then the Lord told Moses to cut out two new stones during that second 40-day time. And he, the Lord, would write the Ten Commandments again with his finger for the nation. And we're going to learn about that in chapter 10.